This episode is sponsored by Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast, and Ashley and I can definitely personally vouch for this. First of all, it saves you a bunch of time, so we don't really talk about this, but Ashley and I both have full-time jobs, and we don't really live close by each other, so we just get together once a week, every week, and talk about our podcast, and Anchor.fm helps us a lot to get everything out there and ready to go for you all to listen to with not a lot of time needed. So first of all, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. There are also creation tools right in Anchor that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or from your computer.
Also, Anchor is free, and even though you don't have to pay any money, it actually allows you to make money from your own podcast even without a minimum number of listeners. It's everything you could possibly need to make a podcast for free in one place.
So if you can't already tell, we both love Anchor. And if you're interested in starting a podcast of your own, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Hi, listeners, and welcome to Above the Wing, a podcast to bring together all aspects of the aviation community, including engineers, journalists, mechanics, pilots, and even casual hobbyists. I'm your co-host, Kim.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley. We'll talk about all things aviation, from current events to new products and airplanes, to industry trends and everything in between. Looking at this week's First in the News article, NASA has just selected Florida A&M University's College of Engineering to help them develop a sustainable aviation system. Researchers at Florida A&M are going to help NASA develop the future of sustainable aviation as part of a five-year, $10 million project. Professor of Mechanical Engineering, Dr. Catafesta, will lead a team in developing a hybrid electric power system that will use turboelectric generators and fuel cells. The system is powered by hydrogen using ambient air or concentrated oxygen, which can help reduce or eventually eliminate aviation emissions. The funding will come as part of NASA's University Leadership Initiative program. The agency is partnering with industry, academia, and other agencies to provide solutions to the challenges presented by climate change. I thought it was pretty cool to see, like, you know, a big name like NASA partnering with a university for their research and developments. So I thought that was a cool headline.
Mm-hmm. And this is another thing that I love about NASA. NASA is just not only space, right? They do a lot of aerospace stuff too, and aviation stuff. And right. NASA has been funding a lot of external research projects to improve and innovate sustainable aviation. So I just love hearing about all their new products, their projects. They all sound super interesting, and I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving on to our next headline, Calm Air's British Airways and Kalula aircraft are grounded in South Africa. On March 12th, the South African Civil Aviation Authority, or the SACAA, suspended the air operator certificate of Calm Air for at least 24 hours. This led to grounding and canceling of Calm Air's flights, which impacted services of British Airways and the budget airline Kalula. This last-minute suspension resulted in a lot of chaos at airports, which was recorded and shared on social media, which is just the way things are nowadays. This last-minute suspension was triggered by numerous safety incidents such as engine malfunctions, engine failures, and landing gear malfunctions, which all are pretty serious. The SACAA team will use the suspension period to investigate and evaluate Calm Air's compliance with regulations and safety standards. If Calm Air does not meet the SACAA safety requirements, the airline's operations will be suspended indefinitely until problems are solved. So, this, I feel like, was a good headline considering the topic of our actual episode today. I always like seeing aviation authorities kind of taking safety as their first priority. And honestly, if I was a passenger that was scheduled to fly on one of these flights, I definitely would be annoyed. But I'd much rather have annoyed customers than a huge accident.
Yeah, it's definitely best to just be proactive in cases like this.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at our next headline, Pratt & Whitney has tested their GTF Advantage engine on 100% sustainable aviation fuel. The GTF Advantage is being prepped for entry into service in 2024 and validating the engine's performance on 100% sustainable aviation fuel in thrust transients, starting, and operability are key steps towards this. Graham Webb, Pratt & Whitney's Chief Sustainability Officer, said, quote, "The GTF Advantage represents the greenest, lowest emission engine in the industry, and it is now demonstrating full operational capabilities for the greenest aviation fuels of today and tomorrow. Operation on 100% SAF is a key component of the industry's commitment to net zero carbon emissions by 2050, and the completion of these tests gets us closer to that goal." So it's pretty cool to see this going into, like, you know, engines that are, you know, produced by, you know, companies that are widely used today. So it's definitely nice to see just another supporter of, you know, SAF and working towards this carbon emissions goal.
Yeah. And we can definitely spend a whole episode talking about this, but Rolls-Royce, GE, and Pratt & Whitney are, you know, the three big names for engine manufacturers, and they're really taking sustainability under their wing, no pun intended, partially because, you know, it's just the direction that the industry is going and they need to keep their customers happy, but also because it's just important for our future, regardless if you're into aviation or not. So I always love hearing about these three companies doing what they do best in incorporating sustainability. All right, now on to our last headline. A woman in aviation and space are being honored in a photo exhibit in Harlingen, Texas, at Valley International Airport. The airport is opening a new exhibit honoring women in aviation and space. This exhibit is in collaboration with Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, Consul of Mexico in Brownsville, Secretaria de la Defensa Nacional, or SEDENA, Brownsville Museum of Fine Art, and Valley International Airport. Juan Carlos Q from the Mexican consulate in Brownsville said, quote, "My hope is that many kids or teenagers can see this and they can see that they're in the position of flying in the future." And as you know, any message about inspiring kids to be in aviation always, like, warms my heart. So I had to feature this news article. If any of you listening are in Texas, this exhibit will be open March 15th to May 15th, 2022. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's always so cool to see when people get together and put something on like this for, you know, for the broader public. It's nice to see.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So in today's episode, we will be discussing Downfall, a Netflix documentary about the Boeing 737 MAX. Just for some background, the 737 MAX is definitely something that has plagued Boeing's history and reputation. It all started in October 2018 when Lion Air Flight 610 crashed 13 minutes after takeoff from Jakarta, Indonesia. Then, less than 1 year later, in March 2019, Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 also crashed very shortly after takeoff. And that was also a brand new 737 MAX. And we talk a lot about the background of the origins of the 737 MAX in our previous episode. So I would encourage you to check that out if you are interested in some more background on this topic. So the Netflix documentary Downfall essentially brings together and puts faces and emotions to the 737 MAX. And that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to watch it, because it really portrays the emotions behind the tragedies that happened because of Boeing's decisions that led to these two crashes. So that kind of transitions me to my first point, because we only watched the first episode, or the first half of the documentary so far, but in the first 45 minutes, it was pretty heavy, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I've read so much about this, and from an engineer's perspective too, it was kind of a harrowing story of what not to do, right? But, and I know it was tragic, because in both crashes, all the passengers and the crew died because the plane literally crashed, like, nose first. But it didn't really hit me until I watched it. Like, there were so many like clips of family members crying and like weeping and sorrow. And they interview a lot of the victims' families. So the first person they interviewed was the Indonesian flight pilot's wife. And oh my God, that was like, that really hurt me a little bit. That really hurt me.
It did. Yeah, I definitely, I mean, even to back it up even a little more before that, like within the first few seconds of the documentary, it immediately started with like something along the lines of like, everyone's generally pretty comfortable flying and like, confident in, you know, the aviation world as it stands now. And it, just like knowing, you know, the documentary that you're about to watch and like knowing the story it's about to go into, it really makes you reflect like, you know, yeah, like every time I get on an airplane, I am very confident. And it's like, you can only imagine that's, I'm sure, obviously how all these passengers and these pilots were also feeling. So it definitely is like a very like humbling reality check, like just right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. And I really like the way they set it up too. Like the whole, I don't know, visually too, in the way it was filmed, like a lot of the B-rolls over the like interviewer or interviewees' answers and things like that, mm-hmm. they did a really good job of like piecing everything together to tell the story.
Right.
And that was really striking to me. And like a couple clips that were also, I'll repeat, very striking to me were like sweeping clips of the wreckage area. So the Ethiopian Airlines flight crashed into land. So there's clips that show the crash site and it's like personal belongings strewn about on the ground. And it shows like the huge ditch that was formed when the plane literally just like flew into the ground, like at like hundreds of miles per hour. And that was like insane.
And another thing too was like, they sort of went into this later on, but they were mentioning how, you know, one gripe that a lot of people had with the news cycle of all of this was how it was focused on plane and stuff. But the documentary did such a good job of, from the beginning, keeping the focus on the people and the pilots and the families. So you can tell that after talking to all these people, like, the directors and the creators really took all of that into account and like from the start made sure that that was a priority of like humanizing all of this.
Yeah, I agree with you. Another thing, like you brought up the media coverage stuff and that kind of jogged my memory about the headlines at the time. Like we lived through this. It wasn't really that long ago. And I remember like Boeing, the documentary covers this too, Boeing tried everything they could to not blame their own design.
Right.
And that was so, like, at the time, I feel like the majority of the population was like, they believed Boeing's claims that it wasn't the plane.
Right. Yeah.
And they found all these scapegoats. And watching the documentary back made me feel so terrible about that. Mm-hmm. I think the Indonesian pilot's wife, she was talking about how they were playing a blame game, you know, they were blaming the lack of training from her husband. And she was saying like, oh, well, if like any US pilot would have been able to maneuver out of this issue. Right. And then she said, my husband completed his pilot's license in the US. And then I was like, come on, guys. And then it comes out that like Boeing didn't even brief the pilots that this new system was implemented, the MCAS. And one of the captains, he says, you know, they looked through the manual. The MCAS wasn't even mentioned. It was like in the back of the whole freaking manual. Right. It was just an abbreviation. It wasn't even like included in the pilot's training. It was just like it was just an iPad training that didn't have any immersive components to it or anything about the new securities or the new MCAS.
Well, and the documentary did such a great job too of setting it up. I mean, just like just how we remember it, right? Like at the time, you know, up until that point, Boeing had essentially done a great job of making the public think that they were this perfect company with no flaws and anything. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's what the public had sort of known them as up to that point. So, you know, no one thought to think otherwise.
Yep, exactly. And I think that also brings to light two very unique and important parts of being a huge player in the aerospace industry. First is the fact that it's not just about the airplanes, it's about the people that you're flying.
Right.
And the documentary did a really, really good job, like you said, of portraying the emotions and putting the focus on the people who were affected. Because at the end of the day, like, you're flying people, and these people have families. They're going places. And one of the victims on the Ethiopian flight, she was, the parents were interviewed, and her dad was saying that she had a career in public health, and she had gone to Africa to do public health things, which is something so important. And she was, you know, flying. This wasn't her first time in Africa, and XYZ, and she was going places for a reason. Like, and she definitely wasn't the only person who had a similar story. I'm sure other passengers were visiting family. They were like going on business trips or something, and all of a sudden it was cut short because of a few shortcuts that Boeing took early on in the design phases for the 737 MAX. And then the second unique thing, I think, is how important the public's trust is in the company. Because like in the beginning, the documentary talked about how most of the public feels comfortable flying. If it's a Boeing, then they'll fly, right? Yeah. And that is important for the success of your company. Like, so important for the success of an aerospace company. But in the blink of an eye, you could lose it. Like, you could spend years and years building their reputation, and then you could lose it just like with one small mistake.
Yeah. To go back to your point too about like the, you know, having this understanding of how important, you know, all your passengers and their families are and stuff. I think that generally is a, you know, something that the pilots, you know, understand and have a sense of, you know, responsibility and thought about. But I think it definitely was a reality check for people, you know, the higher ups at Boeing. And just like you said, the, you know, the people who are sitting in the offices of these larger companies, who aren't the ones out there actually flying these things every day. So definitely, I think, put a lot into perspective for those kind of folks, the ones who aren't dealing with this stuff, you know, on the daily.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that connection is super important too for people who aren't like in a customer facing role. I don't know if that's like the correct phrase, but for people who aren't like interacting with the passengers, who are actually flying on the planes, or who aren't directly interacting with the crew or the pilots and stuff like that, to a lot of the people who design aircraft and aircraft engines, it's just something on a computer screen or something on a manufacturing floor or something. Like, I feel like perspective is so important when you work in this industry, or even like do anything related to this industry, you know?
Right. Yeah, those implications can become, I think, can start as a very distant thought just because it's easy to be, and it, you know, it, at the end of the day, it just gets the job done to, you know, do the, I don't want to say the bare minimum, but, you know, whatever it is to get the job done. But they can become very real very fast. And that's, I think, scary to a lot of companies, but it's the reality of the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, it is something hard to understand when you don't, like, interact with it every single day. Yeah. And I think that is, like, ultimately why Boeing had their downfall. Towards the end of the first half, the documentary started talking about how a lot of culture changes started emerging in the company. So I think one quote said something like, imagine like you've been going to work for the same boss every single day, and then one day you show up to work and everything changed. Right. And like, I stopped right where they started talking about the merger with McDonnell Douglas. But right before I stopped, the former employees were basically talking about how much they loved the company, how great of a place it was to work. And there was a sense of like camaraderie that everyone was in this together, and they were all in this together to make like this magnificent machine, and safety was first. If, you know, there was like a culture to speak up if they saw anything wrong, to speak up if they had any concerns about anything that was happening to basically construct this aircraft. And it sounded like things were starting to change once the merger happened. And that is where I started to feel so frustrated.
Yeah. Also, what happened after the crashes that the documentary went into was executives from Boeing were going around to pilots' unions, and they felt a need to, like, you know, brief pilots on this system. Now, of course, that things had happened, and it was so clear. It was really interesting in the documentary. They actually had a recording of one of those meetings, and it was just so clear how the pilots just saw right through all of this, and, you know, honestly, just were not receptive at all to this training, and sort of rightfully so. I mean, it's so after the fact now, and it's obviously something that they didn't feel confident in, knowing that Boeing had, you know, quite frankly, messed up. And so I think that was a really interesting side of it too, to see, like, them trying to deal with the aftermath and it just not going well at all with the people who were, you know, literally flying their product. So that I thought was a really interesting side of things too, to hear, like, the pilot's perspective after the fact.
I think that perspective was so powerful and effective too, in terms of portraying Boeing's flawed position with the Boeing 737 MAX. Mm-hmm. Because I think the recorded interview took place right after the first crash, and the person who recorded it said, like, we don't feel comfortable supplying it, and the other people in the room agreed, and Boeing said, oh, we're gonna have a software update, it's gonna fix it, it's like, we're gonna keep flying, like, all this stuff, and it was like, and then a second plane crashed. Like, they were really banking on a couple lines of code. Like, how could they be 100% sure that A, the change would be implemented fast enough, and B, that was the root cause of all of these crashes? I think that was, like, so that honestly, I feel like, was Boeing's first pivot away from being, like, an engineering-led, quality-driven company to a business-driven company, because they wanted to keep making money off of this, like, shiny new fleet instead of taking the time to ground the fleet, lose, I don't know, couple thousand dollars and save a couple hundred lives and make sure everything was okay in terms of the aircraft operation. But they decided not to. And that was so frustrating to me.
Yeah. Another thing too, speaking of pilots and, like, the unions, sort of similarly, when they went to when all of this was brought to court, it was interesting to see, like, some of the faces, like, Captain Sully was in there, first of all, who I did not recognize at first.
I know!
I was like, wow, you look different. but yeah, like, it was really interesting to hear, like, all of these same ideas, like, being brought up in court, like, just like we're talking about, like, they, like, all the pilots there just so easily saw through, like, all of this, like, no, like, they could very clearly see what was going on and that this was a flawed, you know, design.
And I think another thing that bothered me a lot was the FAA didn't make the decision to ground the 737 MAX first. It was China did it first, and then a bunch of other countries followed. And America was still flying these planes. Like, what bothered me the most is that it was the mistake originated from an American company. So what I would hope is that if you make the mistake, then you should recognize it and try to fix it ASAP, not wait for everyone else to, I don't know, like, take the first step and then follow suit. Like, there's no integrity in the way that this all unfolded, I feel
like. There's at that point, there was nothing that they had to prove, like, the damage had been done, you know.
Exactly. Like, was one crash not enough to ground the fleet?
I know. Yeah.
And then the documentary also said that they needed pilots to fly the plane from their airports to storage, and no one wanted to fly them. And I was like, I wonder why.
I know. That was actually a really crazy point. They didn't make a big deal out of that, but I remember picking up on that and being like, yeah, like, that's how you know. Like, they won't even do, like, that one flight to get it, you know, like, to storage. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of I liked how they showed the data, too, from the flights. Mm-hmm. But if I was a pilot and I saw the altitude oscillating, like, the way that the documentary showed, I would be like, no way, buddy. There's no way I'm getting in that cockpit.
I know. Yeah. No, it's seriously, a really scary, situation. Now we'll move into our featured photo segment, and you can see the photos that we are featuring this week on our Instagram story highlights at abovethewing.podcast. Kim, do you want to show us your photo?
Yeah, so I actually found this off a online magazine, I think. If you haven't heard of it, the magazine is called Altitudes, and it's a very aesthetically pleasing magazine. But anyway, on to the photo. I just thought this is a really cool photo. It's basically an engine with the nacelle, what it looks like. The nacelle is like cut down the middle and you can kind of see like the guts of the airplane. I think based on the article, this was an engine that was a SAF demonstrator, but I could be wrong. But regardless of what this engine was used for, just like our last episode, I really like seeing the insides of the engines. I feel like that's not something you get to see in everyday life.
Yeah, this is super cool to see like all the like individual components. Like it's just really crazy to wrap your mind around like all of these things have like a purpose, you know, like there's just so much like meat and bones to it.
Mm-hmm. And someone knows really cool. Exactly what each right. one does.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. That's really cool. My photo is of the Air Force McDonnell Douglas F-4B Phantom II. And this photo was back from 1963. I thought it was a really cool, like, historical photos. I like stuff like that sometimes. It's crazy to see, like, you know, to compare it to, you know, the stuff that we're seeing today. So I don't know. I thought it was a cool, you know, it's an action shot and it's flying. It looks like over some ocean. And I just thought it was neat, you know, sort of a tribute to where we've been and you know, it's exciting to think about where we'll go.
I think it's funny because in that era, all the planes look like the Challenger.
Yeah. They do. Yeah. That was the style.
Yes. But that was an integral part of our history. And without it, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Of course.
All right. Well, I think that's all for us this week. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if you want more Above the Wing content, you can check us out on Instagram at abovethewing.podcast.
Thanks for listening.